MGO HockeyCast 1.2. HockeyCast, are we still... I thought we talked about this. We need... Is there... Do we have any creative... Is there a thing... Yep, welcome to MGO HockeyCast 1.2. We'll see you in a little bit. What happened with Brian the other day. Oh. Alright, we are back with the MGO HockeyCast. We're still on HockeyCast. I thought we could be more creative, but apparently not. We're still stuck with HockeyCast. And we've decided to give you another episode after Michigan has concluded its non-conference portion of the schedule. There's a couple games mixed in later on, but they've played, what, 7 games now, had an exhibition or two, basically. Very different types of exhibitions.
Yes.
But we thought we could go over some of the things we've seen, or not seen for that matter, and we'll get into that in a little bit. So, overall impression that you have for the first 7 games?
I think overall, it's, as we were talking about, not entirely outside of the realm of what we were expecting.
Yeah.
Probably a little bit under, from a performance standpoint in a couple areas. And I definitely think that their record, their I was expecting 5-2 at this point.
Okay.
So 4-3 is a little bit, it's behind what we were talking about. I did not expect the loss to Vermont.
Yeah.
More than anything.
Essentially, right. Would have put you at 5-2 at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I agree with you. We'll get into more of breakdown of the team in the next segment. But the first thing we want to do is kind of go through some of the games. So Michigan opens with the Vermont game, like you said. And if you saw the game or read about it or whatever, Michigan had a very poor first 10, 15 minutes where they gave up, I think it was 3 goals. And before you really knew it, they had already 3 goals on the board. And they fought their way back to 3-2 for the majority of the game and then got beat late on a, I believe it was an odd man rush goal. And it ended up being 4-2 and an empty man made it 5-2. So it looked probably a little worse than most of the gameplay was. But I thought, after that initial bad rush, Michigan actually held their own, dominated the puck, and created some scoring chances, and had a chance to come back and tie or even win that game.
Yeah, I think the stats, pretty much tell the story on that one. I mean, at even strength, their shot attempts were 50-34.
Right.
And so it was a pretty, I wouldn't say lopsided game, but it definitely favored Michigan. They couldn't find the back of the net. I think the only goals they got were power play goals.
Yeah.
So they didn't get anything even strength. And it just seemed like one of those nights where they were just not being able to find,
Yeah, I think their goalie had a really good night. Vermont's did. I mean, they've run into that a couple of times already this year, which is, just kind of random. But
he's actually got a pretty good save percentage.
Okay.
Overall so far, even though the team is kind of middling. So it's been, he might be just a pretty good goalie.
Yeah.
And one of those games where it's just a one-off on a weekend, a single game they didn't even play that Friday night.
Which is kind of weird. Yeah, having that game and then they had an exhibition a couple days later against a not-so-great Canadian team.
Right.
That almost, you would hope that those would have been maybe flip-flopped or maybe even not even played, maybe played a little better of a Canadian team.
Yeah, it was unfortunate that they started on that Saturday. Number one, because there was football.
Right, yeah.
But number two, because they hadn't had that exhibition yet. So they played the first regular season game, then 2 exhibitions. They got a lot of practice time after the Vermont game, and I think it showed a little bit going into Western Michigan. But it still hurt them a little bit, for that first game. They just weren't as crisp as they needed to be to beat that kind of goalie on, even strength. And we'll talk more about even strength in a little bit, but it just didn't go as well as they probably would have hoped.
So the next weekend, I was out of town for this one. Mm-hmm. We were still doing football recruiting. But they welcomed maybe the best under-18 U.S. national team that
in history,
the program has seen.
Yeah,
they have ten draft picks?
In 20 years, this is probably their best team ever.
Yeah.
Their best age group. So this is their under-18 team.
That went to South Bend and won, too.
Mm-hmm. They won 4-1 in South Bend. They got out to a pretty big lead in Ann Arbor on that day, if I remember correctly. And kind of coasted the rest of the way.
When they
put the screws to Michigan, it was really hard for Michigan to break out. I remember they didn't look super crisp on some of the puck movement. And honestly, like, a really good junior team will do that. Like, I don't really take a whole lot away from that game because it's a different game. So, like, junior teams play a little bit of a different game than college. So it's especially to play a top-notch one like that.
Yeah,
and that early in the season. those kids have all played together last year. They've played a lot of hockey together. And they're extremely talented. So we got to see Jack Hughes. We got to see John Beecher. They were loaded top to bottom. Goalie is outstanding, probably the best goalie in that age group in the world. I don't really take away too much negative from it. It was odd seeing a college team playing a really good junior team.
Yeah.
But it was definitely not something I would really chalk up to a huge negative on Michigan's part. Like I said, it's a different sport. And so a team that talented is able to dictate those terms. And I think that's kind of what happened, especially early on. The forecheck was really good from USA. And like I said, once they got up, it was really kind of tough. You know, they didn't really keep the pressure up. They didn't really keep their level of focus. And so the game evened out after that. But like the first few minutes were pretty rough.
And Michigan's going to have different goals in that game mm-hmm. than coming out and hanging 10 on a junior team. So
yeah, it's like I said, it's an exhibition. It gets people a chance to, you know, get some ice time that they typically wouldn't. It's not something to really take away. I wasn't really worried after that one, even though it was bizarre seeing those kind of goals go in. Like, there were some really good tic-tac goals. There was some really good sniping from USA. You know, Michigan did have a couple really good chances, I think, in that game. Becker had like 5 or 6 shots, and okay. also Van Wyl had like 5 or 6 shots. So they did get to the front of that quite a bit. And Jack Becker got to do his thing. Spencer Knight was really good on those low-angle shots, though. Or I'm sorry, in tight shots, I should say.
And you, I remember you texting me, if he plays in net, the U.S. team has a really, really good team.
Oh, yeah, they have an excellent team. He's going to vie to be the starter for USA at the World Juniors, I would guess. At least he'll make the team. As an underager, it's really tough to be the starter.
Yeah.
Only a few have done that. I think Jack Campbell did it a few years ago. So it's not really common, and especially with U.S. having a couple good older goalies. But for, you know, in a lot of years, like a goalie of that caliber will be, you know, in the running. And also he's supposed to be one of the highest picked goalies in a few years. So he's trending really well, and he looked outstanding. It was really interesting just seeing a goalie like that play. And overall, you know, Jack Hughes was as advertised. It was a lot of fun. Johnny Beecher for next year for the Michigan fans, I think he's going to step right in and be able to play. I mean, he looked the part. He was able to held his own. His rushes were real good. You know, he definitely has the skill that Michigan's going to need at the forward spot next year. So I think there's a lot of reason for optimism with him. And it was a good game overall. I mean, like I said, there's nothing negative to take away from it.
And then they have probably a fun home-and-home series with Western Michigan, a team that Michigan has played for as long as I can remember back in the CCHA days. And their program has gotten better, and their recruiting, I think, has upticked a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we got to see some of that. They played the Friday night game at Yost, and were kind of outshot in Corsi, but their power play, I think, was really good that night, and ended up, they went out to a lead, but they ended up hanging on by only a goal and winning. And I thought that Western's probably a team that is going to flirt with the bubble, and depending on some breaks in their conference, they have a shot to make the tournament, you know, if they get the right breaks and such. And I thought that Michigan winning that game was good. The next night they lost 5-4, and that was a football at Michigan State, I think. So I saw basically just scores, and I looked at a few shot charts, and Michigan again outshot them that night and had a bunch of power play opportunities that they didn't score on. But I thought overall that series was basically ended the way it should have, with one win apiece.
Yeah, I thought a split was appropriate. The first game was really interesting, seeing the way Michigan was able to play against a team of, I think, similar level. You know, they struggled early on. I think some of it was a little bit sloppy in their own zone mm-hmm. first period. One of the things that made me really optimistic is they cleaned it up as the game went on. They yes. also had a hard time on power play zone entry. So Western had a 1-3, basically.
And that's where you have kind of like one forechecker and three guys sitting it at your defensive blue line?
Basically the blue line, yeah. So they packed it in. And it took Michigan a while for them to crack that. Even though they had 3 power play goals, they didn't have a ton of zone time on those power plays.
Right.
And it was a little bit frustrating to watch, but at the end of the day, they got, you know, 3 goals on 10 shots on those power plays. So even though it was a successful night, and they eventually did crack it. You know, they had a really nice 1-2 with, I think, Ciccone setting up Norris, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
One of those power play goals. Even since Michigan had those 3 power play goals, they still got 3 at even strength. So they were able to succeed, you know, on both fronts. I think that overall, it was a good game for both teams. It was a fun game to watch.
Yeah.
It was neat watching some of the, you know, the lines starting to come together a little bit. And overall, it was, I think, you know, a good win for them.
Yeah, and they definitely needed at least one of those. What I remember for about the second game was that they were down 3-1 and mm-hmm. ended up scoring, I think, 3 second period goals to take the lead 4-3, and then ended up giving up 2 in the third. And that's a little frustrating. You don't really want to do that against a team that you're probably going to be fighting with a bid for, and it would have been a really great steal win, especially if you would have tacked on that Vermont win on top of that, which we thought they probably could get and maybe semi-earned except for a bad first few minutes. But
you know, even though their power play has been pretty good this season, that second game on the road, they were 1-for-11.
Yeah.
So that might be a big part of the reason why they dropped that game as well.
1-for-11, that's...
I know, especially the night before where they had a lot of success. Western looked really unorganized against Michigan that first night. And so to go 1-11 that next night is unfortunate for them. And it probably cost them the sweep, honestly. Other than that, you know, it was a good, really tight game set of games between, you know, two, I think, pretty evenly matched teams on that mm-hmm. weekend. It was honestly great to see the CCHE team back in the arena.
So. Yeah. And then the next weekend, Michigan schedules St. Lawrence, who's kind of perennial bottom 10, bottom 5 team, and the games kind of played out that way. Michigan dominated in Corsi and really didn't allow many shots on goal at all. Levine had a shutout the first night, and they played Straussman, I believe, the second night, and he gave up one goal that was kind of fluky and unlucky as I think a face-off was won right to him, and it bounced off him, and a guy hit a rebound in, or something very similar to that, to where there's really nothing you can really do. Those kinds of bounces are going to happen. But the thing that you were mentioning earlier that is kind of the takeaway is, you know, they win 3-0, 3-1 in kind of games that are no-danger games, but you kind of like to see them generate a few more goals against a team that's kind of down towards the bottom of college hockey.
Yeah, I mean, they only gave up 35 shots on the weekend.
Right.
Which is amazing. You know, in 120 minutes, it's quite a... That's a really good defensive weekend.
Sure.
But, yeah, you'd like to see a bigger score than 3-1, 3-0. It's hard. I didn't want to take too much away from these games. When you play a team that is that far apart from you in talent level and just overall like ability, it's natural to kind of take your foot off the gas a little bit. And of course St. Lawrence is not good enough to make Michigan pay for it, you know. It's kind of a lot like the Arizona State series last year, where Arizona State was really, really bad. So Michigan got the job done, and it is a little bit of a bummer they didn't, you know, just smash them one game, but it's not something to really, you know, that raised any red flags for me, honestly. Like, it's like I said, it's just not an easy thing to have to spend a whole weekend playing a team that bad.
And then they just finished a series up in the Sioux where they split with Lake Superior. They lost 5-2 and they won 5-3. And it is tough to go that far away and get a full sweep, especially for a team that's still kind of trying to find itself in a couple different areas. But they did give up 8 goals. And that was kind of the thing that I was like, it's been the thing that has kind of plagued them so far this year has been they're just pulling the puck out of the net maybe a few too many times. And I know you say that like you never want to do that, but this is kind of a lot for a team that does not seem like they're going to be on pace to set scoring records.
Yeah, they're a little bit behind defensively where we thought they might be, especially given the fact they're returning so much experience on the back end between defense and goaltending. That first night, Lake Superior had started 4-0, and it was their first home game. And the crowd was pretty big.
Okay.
And it's unusual for them, honestly, the last 15, 20 years. So it might have been a tough environment, but I do agree, you know, you don't want to give up 5 goals in a game at all, and especially to a WCHA team, a bad WCHA team, whether you're on the home or on the road, that late in, you know, that on your 6th and 7th game.
Right. Yep, I agree. The last thing we kind of want to touch on is, you know, all 3 of Michigan's road games were not really visible. You could see the Lake State games if you wanted to buy some TV package on Flow TV, Flow Hockey, something. I looked it up and thought about it, and it was $30 a month, or it was $12 a month if you want to do it for a year. And I was like, there's just no way that, you know, Brian's going to expense that, and I'm not going to spend that much money for what essentially is going to be a weekend. We already get BTN Plus, so I, you know, between Adam and I and whatever you are involved to, we can see a lot of those games. But if you want to see a CCHA or an old school CCHA battle, like, you got $30. I mean, $30 might get you a ticket for both nights to a game like that. And you know, you can do that, I guess, if you want. I just think that it does the sport of college hockey a bit of a disservice when, you know, you can't even follow one of the major programs because you don't want to spend a nice dinner to see both games.
It's also a little bit of a hurdle because you don't know the quality of the stream you're going to get. So there's no right. control there. We've actually done this in the past where we've bought some of the package. When they were out east one year, we watched. Yep. We bought one from Boston University.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just really bad. I think we've also got one when they were at St. Lawrence last year as well. So, you know, it is out there if you want to get it, but to have to drop $30 and not know the quality of the stream is a big hurdle. It's honestly disappointing a little bit. They've played 7 games and 3 of them weren't watchable at all, essentially. Yeah. And as fans, you know, you don't want to see that. I think it hurts the overall product. I think it hurts the program itself. You know, fans can't follow the team and then they're asked to go to support the team at home and spend pretty good coin to see a home game. You know, the prices are pretty high.
Yeah.
And to not be able to follow the team on the road, I think creates a little bit of a disconnect where it makes the team more of a novelty than actually something you can be a diehard fan of.
Yeah.
And I looked at the schedule. They only have 12 televised games out of the 35 or so
far.
On the schedule.
I mean, some of them pop up.
Some of them might get picked up. And then that also doesn't count for the Fox Sports North games that Minnesota will televise.
Yep.
But if you look at other teams in the conference, Minnesota has every single game, I think minus 2 of them on television. Wisconsin has quite a few as well for them, their fans. I think one of the things I'd like to see that Michigan would do is put the product on TV a little bit more. I feel like it's a lot less than it has been in the past, and it, at the very least, get a service where fans can watch every game.
Yeah, you know, even if it's just some sort of streaming. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember last year when I was putting together some rooting guides because Michigan was going to make the tournament, and you're kind of looking at other teams and pairwise me and, like, you know, who do we want to win if you're watching some random Cornell or Union game? And there was a few teams out there, I think Clarkson was one of them, that they just stream their home games. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'm sitting there up at Yost as Michigan's playing somebody down the stretch, maybe Arizona State, and I have the Clarkson game on. And the guy walks by and says, what's that? I was like, well, Clarkson's right ahead of us in pairwise, and if they lose and Michigan beats Arizona State, like, that's a big win. And, you know, so you can keep an eye on that stuff. And there's no reason that you couldn't, even if it's not the greatest stream, but you could give it for free. Where you're just like, hey, this is our scoreboard feed or whatever. And that's, like I said, it's not the greatest, but it's not $30 a month.
I think part of the issue is the Big Ten, you know, and the contractual rights with that. And not being on cable is a problem as well. So there's no real solution for the fans that can't make it to Yost and want to follow the team. And I remember when I was younger, I could watch the games on Pass Sports.
Right.
My family didn't have a lot of money growing up, and actually I didn't really have a way to get to Yost when I was young. So my only access to the team were the games at Joe Louis Arena.
Okay.
So for GLI or the game against Michigan State or the game against Lake State that they used to do, those were big deals for me.
Yeah.
I lived a lot closer to Detroit than I did to Ann Arbor. It was a lot more accessible, and it was less expensive,
yeah.
I would say. So they built a fan that way, you know, a lifelong fan. And the people nowadays who want to take a family of four to a game, it's going to run them $150 after tickets and concessions and parking and all that, especially if you're not familiar with Ann Arbor, if you're coming from the suburbs. And there's competition. There's competition these days for everybody's eyes and everybody's entertainment. And so I think it hurts the overall long-term visibility of the program. I don't know what to do. I mean, I don't know what they can do about it. I think the goal should be to get as many games on TV as you can. You know, it's free market.
Or at least for a low-rent streaming price. It shouldn't be to the point of where you're going to spend a ticket for one of these streaming prices. If it's $3.99, mm-hmm. $4.99, mm-hmm. you know, that's fine. You can do that for a game. But to be $30 a month for, you know, whatever, 2 or 3 months, or all you want to do is buy a series or two, I don't know. It's just kind of rubbed me the wrong way, and I thought it was worth talking about.
Yeah,
I
think that's part of where they get no problems having so many, you know, having conferences. It's an archaic system.
Yeah.
There's only 60 teams in the NCAA hockey. There shouldn't be like 6 or 7 different conferences dictating their own television rights to each organization, because when you do the non-conference, you can't see half the games. It's such a big hurdle. And Michigan, I think, could do a little bit better of a job broadcasting the games they have at home, you know, and make it a little bit easier. And that's one of my big wishes.
No, that's a really good wish. We're going to take a break and come back. Hopefully, we're going to attempt to have our first ever guest appearance on the MGO Hockey Cast.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Tried to get a guest star for today, and we still have not figured out the phone. We sometimes have this issue with Jamie that Brian and I have to work out. We end up using his phone.
Mm-hmm.
We do not have Brian's phone here, unfortunately. I'll need to just confiscate it for the next time we do this. But so
he's left it in my couch cushion enough times.
I think he's left it a lot of places.
Yeah,
but
not now.
Adam Schnapp was going to come in and talk to us and kind of give his views on this next segment, but unfortunately, we had some technical issues, and that's not going to happen. We, in the future, that's the plan. So for this segment, we thought we would break down the five different areas of the game, 5-on-5 offense, defense, goaltending, power play, and penalty kill, and we would rate them in regards to what we expected to see. Mm-hmm. We can talk about a little more each in depth as we go through. So the first thing is the 5-on-5 offense. How would you rate it in those ratings?
It's kind of an incomplete, so to speak, because the top two lines have done all right, especially the first line. The first line's been outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Second line has been okay. Mm-hmm. I think they have 3 goals, even strength, on the season, not counting the defensemen.
Yep.
And then the third and fourth lines, I think, between all of the forwards who've played in the third and fourth lines, there's 2 goals over the course. So I would say on the bottom six, it's been pretty far behind where we'd want.
Mm-hmm.
The top six, I think the Pasta/Becker line has been slightly behind where we'd want, and I think the top line has been outstanding.
And I would say that that is about what we kind of expected going into the year. I thought that top line had a lot of potential mm-hmm. with Lockwood and Norris, and recently they've moved Slaker up there, and he's mm-hmm. probably definitely one of their top 4 or 5 wingers.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second line, it took them probably, 2 series or so to put the Pasta line back together?
After the first game.
They put the Pasta. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the majority of the season has been the Pasta line with Becker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that has been, here's the thing, even when they weren't scoring goals, they're still creating some opportunities.
Yeah.
Like when I'm marking down the Corsi stuff, I'm still seeing a lot of 21s, a lot of 91s, mm-hmm. a lot of 8s. So
yeah.
Those two lines, I think, have been playing pretty well enough for a high-end hockey team. The problem then is when you get to the next couple lines, and they've rotated a lot of guys. Slaker started on the third line, I think, with Warren and one of the freshmen,
mm-hmm.
and he's moved up, and that has really solidified the first line, but now you kind of have that drop off after the second shift to mm-hmm. where you kind of have some guys that are really young, and you don't have kind of a go-to player on those lines.
Right. I do think the second line, I guess that's what we're calling it, the Pasta/Becker line. They will score a little bit more. Becker shooting 4.8%.
Yeah.
And especially with the volume of shots he gets in the danger areas.
Right.
I would expect him to probably level off around 11 or 12.
And he's not
a sniper.
He's not a slap shotter, but he's going right. to poke some stuff in.
Yes. He's going to get a lot of greasy goals. He's not going to pick corners so much. But I do think he'll kind of live at the 11 or 12% range based on the kinds of shots he gets mm-hmm. and, you know, what he kind of shoots. So he's pretty far behind that. That's a lot of luck, honestly.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that he's not playing well or anything like that. He's generating a ton of shots. He's doing a pretty good job, especially that line's playing well. I'm not worried about that. I think what you were getting at with the third and fourth lines is they're not really settled. So
right.
The only spot on the third or fourth line, the bottom six, so to speak, that's been pretty consistent is Van Wyl at fourth line center.
And
everything else is kind of turned over quite a bit.
And I thought Van Wyl, I think it's Van Wyl, but
mm-hmm.
I think
sorry.
That he has looked fine, especially as a fourth line center. I know they've put Raby down there with him a couple times, and I've tried to look at them a couple times during the St. Lawrence series and another time. And I've seen him rushing the net a few times and getting some drives and dishes and stuff like that. And if you're getting kind of that from the fourth line, you don't need a ton of goals, but at least if you're not giving up a bunch and you can at least put pressure on the defense when you have your fourth line out, because a lot of times, like, you don't even roll four lines all the time. So when you get that those opportunities and you can get something on net, I think you can live with that.
Yes, I agree. You know, I think that they'll settle as a season goes on. The one spot I see a lot of improvement as a potential for this team so far is those lines. If you see a lot of freshmen, a lot of rookies, and as the season goes on, I think it'll start to click a little bit. If you look at last year, a lot of guys didn't click until after the GLI.
Right.
That's not that unusual.
And their third line, that was when the pasta line first came together, mm-hmm. was after this, in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
And that really took off.
Becker
and,
had like 1 point until the Notre Dame series in January.
Right.
And then he just kind of took off after that. And he was a rookie.
Yep.
He was an older rookie, and he's a drafted player, but still. I think that some of these guys are kind of getting used to the college game. They'll probably get used to live on campus. It's a different life than USHL or NIHL or where they were coming from. And I think once you get into Christmas, everyone goes home, comes back, you know, does the GLI. I think you'll start to see a lot more cohesiveness and probably them settle on a solid third and fourth line.
And the two kind of freshmen that were kind of a little higher on because they're the younger guys, mm-hmm. Randall and Moyle, have been mm-hmm. playing somewhat consistently. And then even adding in Luke Morgan, who does have 4 points in 7 games. Mm-hmm. And that's acceptable, especially mm-hmm. if he settles into a third line role. Mm-hmm. You know, there's different takes on should Slaker be on the first line or the third line. Can you throw maybe a guy like Warren up on the top line or put Slaker down on the third line with either those guys or Morgan? But if they decide on one and you can then settle into those roles, I think Morgan as a third line player can be fine, even if it's with mm-hmm. Warren. You just need to make sure one of them is centering mm-hmm. well, and you know it takes a little while to get some chemistry between a couple players.
Yes, it's been mostly Warren and Morgan mm-hmm. on that line, and they've rotated guys in and out a little bit. They've got Lambert there quite a bit.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know, so I do think there will be some cohesiveness that starts to form there. And as this it's a fourth line will come together as well. They've tried Wimborg a little bit. I think they tried him at second line center last game.
Oh.
You know, so they're moving guys in and out. Raby's been mostly in. He sat out once or twice. You know, so I think that they'll start to settle. And like I said, it's more of a process than anything else. It's kind of unfortunate that they're going to get into the meat of the schedule probably before they're a little bit ready.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just kind of the reality of it. But if I do have to pick one spot on the team where I do see some improvement, that's, I would say, imminent. Like, I'm going to bet on it. Like, I think that the bottom six will start being a little bit more productive, because 2 goals out of the bottom six forwards is not really something that is sustainable long term. I mean, they'll have a really rough season if that's the kind of production they get long term.
That's true. And if the top line with Norris, who's putting the puck in the net now, and that's kind of the thing that we talked about in the previews, is if this guy can finish, you know, Lockwood can, if they stay healthy and play together, and you add a guy like Slaker, that's a really good top line. We know that we've seen the pasta line for almost a full year now.
Mm-hmm.
That is a solid line too. Mm-hmm. If they can get anything out of that third line, all of a sudden, okay, you know, now you're kind of where a little bit above what you'd expect and kind of where you want to be heading into the second half of the season.
One of the things that is worrisome, or I wouldn't say worrisome, but a question in my mind that they haven't had to deal with yet, is when they moved Norris from third line center to first line center this mm-hmm. year, he was their shutdown center and he was right. really excellent at it. We talked about it in the first podcast.
Right.
They don't have that right now, so they're going to have to find the centerman who is going to be able to be the matchup center, take the defensive zone draws, and really match up against other teams' top lines. So we're going to get into the Big Ten play where there are good players.
Yep.
You know, there are going to play some good players that will play in the league, and they haven't had that yet, you know, frankly, outside of Western, perhaps. So it's going to be a little bit of an adjustment there, and I think that'll be something we should look out for, is are they going to find that matchup line that's going to be able to take the pressure off of the Norris line, because the Norris line has to be doing the scoring.
Right.
It's really the line that's going to produce. If they're going to do any scoring at 5-on-5, it's going to have to be them. They're going to have to find the matchup line to get, you know, the defensive zone draws and whatnot, so they can deploy the Norris line offensively.
So now we'll move on to the defense. What would you say? Expected, better than expected, or worse than expected?
I think the top pair is as we expected.
Mm-hmm.
To say it would be impossible to say they overachieved, because they're great. You know, mm-hmm. they're expected to be outstanding. Ciccone's second on the team in scoring.
Yep.
Quinn Hughes is Quinn Hughes.
Yep.
So there's not really a lot to talk about there in terms of, you know, what they've done. They've been outstanding, and it's what they've needed. The rest of the defense has kind of been in flux a little bit. So they've kind of settled on Martin and Luce as a pair the last few games.
Yes.
and they've settled on Blankenberg and Boca as a pair. They played Summers a little bit earlier in the season. He hasn't played a whole lot. They did play Gingell last game, but that was his first game as well. So it's been a little bit in flux on the bottom two pairs.
Yeah.
But it looks like they're starting to kind of coagulate and settle on something. I'm not sure. I one of the things I thought they were really good with last year, and this is my opinion, and it's not backed up by any advanced stats or anything like that.
Yeah,
we don't
that's fine.
We don't have that kind of analysis available to us. Boca and Martin did really well together, I thought.
Okay.
And they didn't break them up until right before the tournament last year. And after that, they paired loose with Boca. And I think there was a little bit of a drop-off there. So to split Boca and Martin up long-term, I think there's kind of a risk that you're hurting the second and third pairs more than instead of having two strong pairings. It's a little bit in flux on the second and third pairs. So that's one thing that concerns me. That might be why we're seeing not as much production out of the defense that we were hoping.
Okay.
In terms of defensive quality and whatnot, we're giving up a little bit more scoring chances than we'd like.
You know,
I think it's not been as to the level that we thought. We thought that the strength would be on the defense returning five players essentially. And
that have been drafted.
And four guys who won't be with the program next year because they'll age out and probably three or four of them will play professionally.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it was supposed to be a strength. It hasn't settled on that yet. I think the potential is there for it to still be a strength. And they're going to have to kind of settle on that real quick because the gauntlet is upon us.
Yep. And that's what I was going to say is that I would say that this was a little bit worse than expected because you have a lot of returning players, you have a lot of production, and you have a lot of guys that have just been in the program for a while. And they should know at this point what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when you've looked at the games, you know, we've only seen, three or four of the games, but when you've looked at those, a lot of those goals have not necessarily been on the goalie. It's been a guy losing a guy, someone being unchecked in front of the net, which was a problem a couple of years ago. So you have guys just kind of coming around the net and still being able to get a shot on goal. And so now you're not only beating like one guy, but you're beating two, and you're sort of beating the defense. And that's kind of the thing that when you don't have a lot of scoring depth through multiple lines and a lot of highly drafted kids who are going to be able to make up for that on the other end, you just kind of can't do, and especially when you have those drafted guys on defense. That's the thing that you have to rely on, and they haven't been able to so far. Now, I'm not going to say that they won't because I think that there's pedigree there that the improvements were made in the defense in the second half of the season. So I think that there's reason to be optimistic that it can come back. It's just that we haven't seen it so far.
I agree completely with that. That I think there's a little bit of gain to be made, and I think that, especially in the bottom two pairs, they could probably settle on something.
So now we'll go to your specialty, goaltending, where we've seen Levine play most of the games. Straussman has gotten in a couple of times. I think the game at Western and then one of the St. Lawrence games. But
He played this Saturday against Lake State as well.
Oh, did he really?
It's a 4-3 split. After the first game, they've basically split every weekend.
Okay, so maybe it's an open competition. What have you seen from the goalie competition compared to what you've expected?
It seems to be that way at this point. I didn't know what to make of Straussman because I hadn't seen him play coming into the season. He is, as we talked about earlier in the last podcast, he's got an outstanding track record in the USHL. I think he was third team all-league last year,
right?
Which is impressive. He's got really excellent numbers, so he projects to be a pretty good college goalie, especially at his age. He's a little bit smaller than I was anticipating. He plays a little bit smaller. He's got really good ability, though. I think he's got good athleticism. And I think that he will be a good goalie long-term for them. It's hard to say. You know, we haven't seen him play a whole lot at home.
Right.
So, and especially with it not being televised, it's been a little bit difficult. But I thought he showed well in the national team game. And I expect it probably to be a split at least moving forward. Levine hasn't really done anything to solidify the starter's job in his games that he's played, and I think it's kind of opening the door for Mann as Mann gets used to the college game.
Yeah, the thing we've talked about, I think, just at games and such, but Levine has made most of the saves that he probably should make, and you can't look at a lot of the goals and say, oh, that's just a really, really bad goal. There might have been one, two here or there, but for the most part, he's made the saves he should make. The thing is that he's not making a lot of the saves that he potentially could make, that you could go to the next level of being like, now this is an elite goaltender that Michigan's had years ago, where if the defense does break down, you have a guy that's going to snare the puck. And that, I think, has been I would say that it's about expected, but maybe a little bit below. Because in the second half of the year, he played better, and he had hotter games. He had a couple meltdown games, but for the most part, he kind of took his level up to a B+, maybe even bordering on an A-.
So I think there's been a kind of a narrative that the goaltending hasn't been as good, I think some have been blaming, you know, their kind of middling start on the goaltending, and I don't entirely buy that for a few reasons. Levine's always been somewhat of a systems goaltender, so they play really strong defense in front of him last year. He's able to make the saves because they know his limitations. So it was the high floor, low ceiling kind of thing that we talked about.
Yep.
And they haven't given him the ability to make those saves as much as I think. You know, I don't think the defense has been as strong. We talked about it just, you know, a few minutes ago, where they haven't been settled on the second and third pairs. So he's probably going to see a few more quality scoring chances than he should normally be seeing. And he's just not the kind of goalie that's going to, you know, bail them out on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
That's not what they signed up for,
yep.
frankly.
Yep.
So I don't blame the goaltending. It's yet to be seen if Mann can get them there, if he's able to kind of overcome, you know, some of the defensive breakdowns and whatnot, if that's what they're going to go for if he ends up being the starter. So it's yet to be determined. But I don't think the goaltending's been to the level we were hoping.
Right.
But at the same time, when you sit back and look at it, I'm not willing to blame the team's start on that at all.
Nope.
And I don't think I'm not really down on Levine long term, even though you know, the numbers are pretty poor. I think he's one of the near the low end in the NCAA for save percentage right now. And I think as a team they're not much better. But I don't think that's an indication of where they could be this year. I think if they were able to give him a little bit more structure and, you know, block a few more shots, keep the guys out of the middle a little bit more, I think they're gonna see a little bit more success. It's not like he's just going to go in the tank after, you know, the way he played last year and the year before. He's pretty consistently established himself as a solid floor goaltender where you know what you're getting on the, you know, on the minimum. He's not letting a lot of howlers this season where,
nope.
you know, so
it's all just been pretty much guys that could have been taken out by the defense. Maybe a couple of those you would have liked him to make the save, but for the most part, it's generally not been his issue.
Yeah, and this is the goaltender in me coming out a little bit where I'm going to say, you know, Hayden Levine and Strauss Mann, they're not responsible for scoring 14 even strength goals in 7 games, right?
Yeah.
So they need to do a little bit more offensively, and I think that things will get a little bit easier for the goalies. That might just be the goalie in me, but I'm not willing to kind of write either one of them off just yet, especially Mann, because he hasn't been in the game long enough.
I mean, he's a freshman.
Right, and I definitely think that there's room for improvement. I think they will improve. And if they don't, it's going to be a long season. It's just kind of like what we talked about with the bottom two lines. In the first part of this, there's going to need to be a little bit of an increase in production because it could become a long season, especially as we get into the meat of the schedule with, you know, more talented shooters and better organized teams.
So moving on now to some special teams areas. One, I think, is maybe the brightest spot on the team so far is the power play. And I will say right up front that this has gone better than I expected it to so far. They've improved a lot since last year, and if anything, I would say that is what has carried them through the first quarter of the season so far.
Yeah, I think it was really big, especially in that Western game that we watched.
Yep.
You know, you could see it as a work in progress throughout the game as they started to figure it out. Now, one of the reasons the power play is going to probably carry the load is you're getting your best players out there a lot, and especially a team this top heavy, you're going to get a lot more ice time with Norris, with Hughes, with Ciccone, you know, with Lockwood. And from what I've noticed, they've been playing Hughes and Ciccone together instead of playing four forwards on the power play.
Yeah.
I think that works for the way they're set up. You know, I think for the roster they have, it works, especially, you know, for being the veteran that Ciccone has. He can move around a little bit. He's got 8 assists. You know, he's more than assists per game, second leading scorer on the team. So they've definitely found something with that power play. There was one game where they were, what, 1-for-9 or
1-for-11? You were talking about the Western game.
Yeah, notwithstanding, I mean, if you take that game out,
yep.
I mean, their power play is probably
the
towards the top of the country. So I think that's a very good thing, and I would expect it to continue for most of the season. I think where they're sitting right now, they're around 25%. I think that's going to really help them. And like I said, the biggest reason being is you're getting your best players on the ice. And honestly, that top five that they have, you know, the 3 forwards and the 2 defensemen, that's as good as anybody's going to have in college hockey. So you're maximizing the opportunities with those guys in the ice. And they've done a really good job deploying that. And, you know, I think it's going to be pretty good as the season goes on.
And we said in the preview that that was one of the things that we thought that the team could get better at. Mm-hmm. And there were certain things that they may not return all the scoring they had last year, but mm-hmm. there are certain things they could improve upon that would make up for it. And that's mm-hmm. kind of what we've seen so far, is that an improved power play, not just one or two players, but system goals where they're moving the puck from side to side. They're using the 1-3-1, but they're also using two defensemen, so there's different options, mm-hmm. and you're getting different shots from different places. And they have guys like the Pastas and Becker who can sit in front and tap in those rebound goals when you have shots coming from Lockwood and Norris on the sides. And that's what they've done so far, and that I think it's what they've needed to do, and that's what they've done. And that's kind of a tat tip to probably the coaching staff.
They have the personnel to have an effective power play, and the coaches have definitely maximized that. You can tell just while you're watching the games. Like, it's an intelligent power play, and it's well done.
So now moving on to the last section, which is the everybody hang on to something, because we're going to go on the penalty kill for a couple minutes. Mm-hmm. And this was noted as last year being probably the biggest weakness the team had, is that even as their season picked up and they got better throughout the course of the second half, the penalty kill was still an issue. Mm-hmm. When we played Northwestern and BU, as soon as somebody went in the box, you know, you're just kind of hanging on to whatever you got near you, just hoping to clear the puck out. Their percentage was down in the 70s. I think at some point it got down into the low 70s before they finally brought it back up. And it's sitting at about 78% right now. And that's...
It's only 3% better than last year.
Something like
so
that.
So it doesn't look as terrifying this year, but it's still not quite where they need it to be.
I just think that a program like this can't, unless you're scoring buckets of goals, mm-hmm. you just, and you're not going to take any penalties, which is, mm-hmm. it's just somewhat unrealistic.
Right.
That you have to kill, what, at least 80 to 85% if you're going to be around average.
So as we were talking about the power play before taking out the 1-for-11 game, the Friday game against Lake State was 1-for-9. So if you take that out, their penalty kill's probably rated much worse. And so you have to really consider, has there been any improvement, and if not, why?
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely a level of concern for them, I would say, because you don't want to get into a point where, you know, you're facing, just as we were talking about with the Norris line, these teams are going to be playing in the Big Ten are going to have good top lines.
Yep.
And they're going to have good guys that can just pound away on the power play.
And if you remember, Ohio State and Notre Dame last year both had good power plays. Mm-hmm. And if you're giving them penalties, one thing that kept Michigan sort of in the game against Notre Dame when they've played them is they didn't take a ton. They mm-hmm. gave up goals in there. It was one or two, but they didn't take 6, 8, 9 penalties. And if you do that against a good, solid mm-hmm. team, I mean, you're going to get blown out of the building.
Yes, and to that point, one of the things I've noticed is they have a few guys who are taking a ton of penalties this year, and they're going to have yes. to clean that up as well. So you listed the guys.
I had Griffin Luce has 16 penalty minutes in 6 games, which is over a penalty. It's mm-hmm. yeah, it's about a penalty, a little over a penalty a game. And then Nick Pastujov has 14 penalty minutes in 7 games, so he's averaging a penalty a game too. And you know, if you're getting nothing from anyone else, then that's fine. But, you know, you just kind of have to be a little bit smarter until you are not giving up goals on the penalty kill.
The Luce and Martin pair has 10 penalties between them. So it's yeah. quite a bit, you know, and that's going to be difficult to overcome, especially for like us, you know, as we're talking about switching the defense pairs up.
Yep.
That's really difficult. And also, that's probably one of your penalty killing pairs of defense, or you know, people that are going to be out there on the penalty kill. So now one guy's in the box, that becomes more of a struggle as well. So I think they're going to really have to clean that up. It's not, you're going to get some from Norris because he's going to be out there. He's going to be aggressive.
Sure.
But your guys who aren't your top six or your, you know, top two pairs or top pair are going to have to stay out of the box a little bit more, because it's just going to create a lot of stress on, you know, the rest of the team. And it keeps the Norris line off the ice, frankly.
Yep.
So you're reducing the amount of opportunity that, you know, you're going to have for success on those. And especially with the limited roster, I would say, in some ways that they have, they're going to have to be really mindful of that, because you're going to have to maximize the Norris line and the Postal line opportunities.
So we referenced that Notre Dame is coming up, so we're going to take a quick break, come back, and we will glance through some of the Big Ten teams and let you know kind of what we're going to be facing in the next couple months.
So we'll start with Notre Dame. They play them this weekend, if this gets published in time, if I don't keep making a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, no, we do draw the Irish first, which is, you kind of want revenge for what happened last April, but also I'm not sure that I want to face the maybe consensus number one team in the Big Ten at home on your first weekend. I mean, it's nice to get them at home, but then, like, you know, that's it. That's, you know, they used that home series last time in the second half, and it really springboarded, I should say. And now we're getting it right off the bat.
And they are looking pretty decent so far. Yeah, they did get swept by Duluth, but it looks like Duluth is starting to run away with
really
this.
Good.
Yeah. And they beat Nebraska Omaha pretty soundly. They're not looking very good. They did beat Providence pretty soundly as well, though. So they have some good wins. They split with Ohio State, which is to be expected if they're the top two teams in the conference. And it's looking like Notre Dame's not really missed too much of a beat. That will be a good test this weekend. So I think that Michigan, you know, as we talked about a little bit earlier, with some of the things they have to tighten up, and we're going to see where they really stand once they get into this weekend. And honestly, coming up, you know, they have Penn State next the weekend after that, and then Wisconsin Thanksgiving weekend.
Yep.
And so it's going to be a really good three series test to see, you know, where Michigan really stands.
And it's in typical Notre Dame fashion, their top five, six, seven scorers, as I'm looking at this, are all juniors and seniors, and that's kind of what they do, is they cycle guys through their program and they get them to their upperclassmen years, and then that's who they rely on. They also still have Cale Morris, who was a Hobie finalist, I think, last year, and he's a junior. So we'll get even another year of him, but I was looking at some of the advanced stats, and they still don't really do really well in Corsi. They don't have the puck a ton, but they rely on good defense and some of their senior scorers, and then they have a really good goalie, and that's kind of what we've come to expect from Notre Dame the last couple of years.
Yeah, they're getting a 926 as a team save percentage, which is, as expected,
pretty good.
Yeah, and they're not really tearing up the score sheet, so it's a lot of low-scoring games. They did bomb Nebraska-Omaha, but aside from that, it's been a lot of one-goal games, really tight games. I would expect, if this series is going to go well, it's going to have to be a mirror of what it was last January when Michigan started turning the season around.
Yep.
And which was two really tight games. They might have to hang on for dear life in one of them. It's going to be a good test.
Stay out of the box.
Yeah, they will execute. I mean, Jeff Jackson is as good as it gets as a coach, and they are going to be prepared. And, you know, he's got that program rolling. So I would expect a really stiff test this weekend.
So next up, we have Penn State on the schedule, I believe. And that is going to be Michigan's test. It's going to be in Happy Valley for that game, or that series, I should say. But Penn State is one of those teams that they take a lot of shots. They do score a lot of goals. But from what we remember from last year, they don't play great defense, and their goaltending is still a little iffy. Is that still the case from what you've seen?
Peyton Jones is at 939 right now, so that might not be the case anymore. He might have really figured it out.
Okay.
He's a junior now. They are splitting, so they have their senior Funky. He's not doing as well, though. He's 885.
Okay.
I don't know what the split is versus opponents.
Right,
you know? But, you know, one of the things that's really helped Michigan and other teams against Penn State in the last few years is the kind of the leaky goaltending. And some, you know, honestly, some of the leaky defense. They do return some good players. They still have Evan Barrett. You know, they're pretty strong still. So far, their schedules, they've done pretty well. They were undefeated up until losing against Arizona State on Saturday.
Okay.
So Arizona State's also looking pretty good. So
yeah, that's a little weird.
Yeah, because they looked like they did not belong in the NCAA last year when they were here.
No, and I think they're leading the NCAA in goals now or something weird like that. But
right.
So maybe losing to them isn't as bad as it would have been last year.
Yeah, Penn State has swept Clarkson, Niagara, beat Princeton in a one-off, and then split with Arizona State. So it's looking pretty good for them.
A lot of home games, but you know, you got to win those, and they did.
Yeah, they actually haven't had a road game. They will do a home-and-home with Robert Morris this weekend, and then they will host Michigan in 2 weeks.
All right. The other team that we think is probably going to be pretty good, they got a new coach that is a little bit terrifying, is Minnesota, where they went and got Bob Motzko from St. Cloud State, who had basically built their program into a college hockey power over the last few years, and then was offered the job after they let Lucia go. And Minnesota has not had as good a start as maybe we would have hoped, but I think that they're still a lot of talent on that roster.
They've only played five games, so it's kind of hard to say. They started pretty late, which is pretty unusual. Their leading scorer has 5 points, so it's really early in the season. They still have Shearhorn. They have been giving more games to Matt Robson, who's a junior goalie. I think Shearhorn kind of held them back in the past. Coming in with a clean slate with a new coach, you know, they're able to kind of shift away from that. They did destroy the under 18 team 7-1.
Wow.
They destroyed some other Canadian team in their exhibition. They did beat Duluth.
They beat and tied Duluth.
And then they've lost to North Dakota and got swept by Minnesota State. So they started off decently. They're on a three-game losing streak. We'll find out where they are when they play Michigan. It's going to be pretty late in the December, so that'll be the last series before the break. But they've got Wisconsin, they've got Michigan State, they've got Ohio State before they play Michigan. They've also got a home series against St. Lawrence, so that'll be fun for them. You know, honestly, the one team that I thought was going to be pretty good that I'm a little bit down on is Minnesota. So they're not as strong as I thought they'd be. It might take a little bit of time for Motzko to kind of get in there and get a system going. You know, we saw that Mel there was a little bit of a struggle in the first half last year, and they really took off mid-January in last season. So maybe we'll see that kind of gain from Minnesota. It's unfortunate that they're going to play Michigan so late in the season, so to speak, compared to a lot of the other Big Ten teams, because I think that might help them and be bad for Michigan. You know, mm-hmm. they'll have more time to come together. But yeah, they're one of the teams that's disappointed me so far. So Penn State's surprisingly a little bit better than I thought they were. Minnesota's a little bit worse.
And then we'll move on to their neighbor, the other newer member of the Big Ten, Wisconsin, who had an interesting year last year. They got better a little bit, and then they lost a couple of their centers, and they're still I think recruiting well as they have a pretty good young head coach, but they haven't gotten off to the greatest start and have lost a few games in the last probably few weeks. So they're sitting what it looks like about 4-4, mm-hmm. 3-4. And they've played BC, who surprisingly is in the bottom like 10. And that shows you what early pairwise rankings end up being. But what have you seen from Wisconsin?
They can't keep the puck out of the net so far.
Hey, that's surprising. I know someone else like that.
Yeah, their save percentage is actually lower than Michigan's. So they've really struggled. Barry is just not getting it done for them. They've turned to another goalie they got out of the NAHL who seems to be doing a little bit better. Finnish goalie named Daniel Lebedev. He's got a pretty good history in the NA and the USHL, and then comes to Wisconsin and is posting a .922 so far in four games. So if they can get the defense sorted out and the goaltending, they might have a little bit of a room for improvement there. This team is pretty young, so a lot of the recruiting that Granato has done in the first few years, their leading scorers go sophomore, senior, sophomore, sophomore, freshman, sophomore. And so they are really looking forward to the future. They're going to be pretty good coming up. Keandre Miller was a first-round draft pick on defense. He is destroying his competition so far, so he's doing really well. He's kind of emerged as a candidate to make the the World Junior team as an underager, which mm-hmm. is unusual, especially for the amount of depth that the United States has. He's a definite possibility for that team. He's at a point per game so far. Seeing some highlights coming through on Twitter of him, he's having a good season. So this team is definitely up and coming. They are filled with young players, and they're doing good so far. If they can get that goaltending figured out, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with in the next couple of years.
Well, Michigan will see them in a few weeks at Yost when the football team has a pretty important game that weekend too, I think. So
those Thanksgiving series, it used to be every other year, Wisconsin-Minnesota.
Yep.
That used to be a really great thing, and it went away, and it was really sad. You know, it used to be kind of a novelty to
college
see
hockey showcase.
Right. And then that was back before the Ohio State series was on the weekend. So it was like the biggest thing to do that weekend.
Right.
And it was only every other year. So it was like it was kind of like a holiday in a sense. Now that they have a home series every Thanksgiving, it's a little bit less exciting, especially because you have the Ohio State weekend in there. You have Black Friday. You have Thanksgiving the day before. It gets a little bit hairy. But this is the first, I think, really strong opponent they've had since they started doing that. Like last year, it was Lake State. The year before, I think it was Mercyhurst. So to have like a big series.
One year they played Ohio State because they had the same. But
Yeah.
I think that actually might have been last year, and Michigan got run twice, if I remember correctly, at Yost.
Oh, but, yeah.
So now we'll move on to our in-state rival, Michigan State Spartans, who have been not so great over the past, I would say, decade or so, and last year made a coaching hire that was pretty good, and they still just didn't have a lot of talent. They ended up kind of pushing maybe the top half of college hockey, and now they return that top line, which was pretty good, I would say, last year, and it's off to a good start, and Michigan State has a few wins. I don't know that they'll live up to their current number 9 pairwise ranking as the season progresses, but it's definitely a step in the right direction for them.
They are seeing some success. You know, they swept Cornell on the road not too long ago. They are, like you said, they're pretty high in the pairwise. They split with Northern. They just split with Ferris. They're at Arizona State this weekend, so that might be interesting for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's definitely a program in the right direction. They're a little bit better than I was anticipating, but we did think they'd sit around probably 30 in the pairwise by the end of the year. They finished, I think, like 35th last year. So we did think that every Big Ten team would touch top 30 this year. I think they're definitely heading that way. And it's not going to be a walkover. So I think Michigan's had a lot of success the last few years against them.
Yeah.
It's been a little bit depressing, honestly. It used to be really fun to hate Michigan State in hockey. And traditionally, that was Michigan's biggest rival.
Right.
And it hasn't been that way in a very long time because they really hit the depths of, despair.
Yeah.
For quite a while. You know, honestly, they've been backsliding ever since they won that national title.
Yeah.
And so Danton Cole's done a good job. He had a pretty good pedigree coming in. And he's brought in a few good recruits this year. Their classes are getting stronger. He leveraged, I think, his national team connections because they brought in a couple of those guys.
Right.
And they're on the right path. It's going to take a couple more years before they're a real contender, but they're not going to be a walkover. Their possession numbers are still kind of bad, but the results are good. And it's trending that way. Their save percentage is not as good, but they're getting there. And I don't think it's going to be a total party weekend when Michigan plays them.
Well, and their top line has 12, 9, and 7 points. And those are probably most of their points that they have on the entire team. But it's still one line that if you don't check, we'll put the puck in the net. Mm-hmm. So now we'll move on to the last opponent. And the reason we saved this one for the last is because for whatever reason, Michigan will not see them until mid to late January. So for whatever reason, we don't get to see Ohio State in the first half. We get them twice in the second half. They actually had their first Big Ten series last weekend where they had maybe their toughest road trip going to Notre Dame and got out of there with a split. I watched a little bit of the Friday game, and I think it was like a 1-0 game, really low-scoring game, which I guess you kind of expect from Cale Morris and Sean Romeo when they face off. But they seem kind of similar to last year. They return Lisinski, I think. They return Joshua and Jobst, and then they still have that wonder goalie in Sean Romeo, who Michigan had a little bit of trouble with last year.
He was hard to solve. They opened the season sweeping Arizona State, I should say. Split with UMass, which isn't that bad because UMass is one of the best players in the country.
Yes.
Lost and tied Bowling Green. They got bombed one of those games.
Bowling Green's also not that bad.
Yes, Bowling Green is very good so far. Bowling Green has a couple excellent players, by the way. Okay. They've recruited pretty well for being the WCHA. And then they split with Notre Dame. So they're about where we thought they'd be. We didn't know Bowling Green was going to be that good. You know, so to be where they are, it's okay. I do think they're still going to be a contender for the league title. And not playing them until late January is probably a really good thing for Michigan because they're going to need all four of those lines, as we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of being able to put Ohio State off, if you're going to put off one team, if it can't be Notre Dame, it's good that it's Ohio State to let that late in the year.
All right. Well, that's a quick run through of all of the other teams in the Big Ten. We'll take one last break and come back with just a few predictions about maybe where we think Michigan can finish in the Big Ten, and are we still thinking that they'll make the tournament? like to always predict a lot of things because there's a lot of randomness in sports, but for the sake of some writing and some audio content, it's nice to have some projections, I guess we'll call them. And in the Big Ten, we've gone through all the teams. We've seen Michigan a number of times. Obviously, there are things that can get better or that can get worse, but where do you see Michigan finishing in the Big Ten, given all these teams we just talked about?
I think you should answer first.
I have to go on record first?
Yes.
Well, I'd like to hope that their defense gets a little bit better and solidifies the way it did. I hope that their second line can put the puck in the net a few more times like we've seen them get chances. And if they can develop a third line and keep some pucks out of the net, especially developing their defense around whichever goalie they settle on, most likely Levine, I could see them creeping up and doing a little bit what they did last year, where they kind of got into that 3-4 range. I don't think they're probably going to be as good, consistently good, as an Ohio State, Notre Dame, and you'd have to think that Minnesota's only going to get better. We'll see about Penn State. We've seen them explode in the beginning part of the year and then completely fade down the end. Wisconsin has kind of fluctuated a little bit, and I still think that Michigan probably has more talent than Michigan State. So I'm not dropping them to the bottom of the conference, but you're probably looking at somewhere between the 3 and 4 seed.
I agree with all that. So the big key for me is Wisconsin's goaltending situation going to get solidified?
Okay.
So, you know, as we mentioned last segment, they found a goalie that's doing pretty well so far. You know, Barry's not been what they needed to be. You know, mm-hmm. He wasn't last year.
Right.
And also Minnesota, and if they're going to take the next step with Motzko, if they're going to kind of congeal as the year goes on,
yep,
and get better. Those two things I think are going to determine for me where Michigan finishes. I think we kind of know what Michigan's going to be in some ways. We've discussed.
Yep.
I do think there's room for improvement, but it could be part of this is because the Big Ten is so good. The first couple of years of Big Ten hockey, we were pretty down on the conference. We thought it was really discouraging. There were a lot of bad coaches in the conference, frankly. It was kind of a joke.
Yep.
And we didn't really love it, especially coming off the CCHA, you know, losing those rivalries with Miami and Notre Dame and you know, inheriting Eves coaching Wisconsin, you know, and
yeah,
and Michigan. It was not as good as it needed to
be. Well, and you had two programs that were that have a lot of money and that have the capability in Ohio State and Michigan State really just didn't take their program seriously enough. And now you're seeing that not be the case. And all of a sudden you don't have 2 or 4 series a year that used to be kind of walkovers.
Yes.
Are now as tough a series you're going to find.
Now, the upside of this league is everyone gets home and home, so
yep,
it's a really good balanced table. And also, it's become what we want it to be. It's become one of the better conferences in college hockey, if not the best, especially in terms of the level of coaching top to bottom.
Yes.
So there are no bad coaches in this conference anymore.
Right.
They're all very good to great coaches. And you're going to see, you know, basically slugfests every weekend, especially some of these other programs start to kind of get their recruiting back and all that. With that being said, I do see Notre Dame and Ohio State being the top two seeds again.
Mm-hmm.
I think that series this past weekend kind of played out the way we thought it would, and that's pretty much how it's going to go all season, I think. They're basically continuations of what they were last year, probably contenders for the national title. I think third, fourth is going to be in flux a little bit. I do see Penn State third right now, especially if their goaltending continues. I would say that Minnesota or Wisconsin or Michigan has that opportunity to creep into the fourth spot.
Okay.
Just depending on what happens, who's going to get the improvement, who's going to get the improvements first.
Yep.
And who's going to get the better improvements. So they're all room for improvement for all those teams. And it's going to kind of, I think, come down to all those things. And then I do think Michigan State's going to finish last, but they're not going to be a pathetic last. They're going to be,
right,
whoever finishes sixth is going to be right in front of Michigan State. It would be my prediction. And I think Michigan's going to finish in that 4 or 5 or 6 range with Wisconsin and Minnesota is what my guess would be right now.
Yep.
Now, this is barring injury or whatever. To
sure.
People.
Well, I mean, you can't, right, you know, that kind of stuff, but you can't predict.
So but I think we're kind of on the same page there.
Yeah.
And I do, like I said, that's not to be negative. Like to finish fourth, fifth, or sixth in a 17th conference could be seen as we're blasting the team. That's not the case. We got what we wanted with having a really great conference. And this roster, honestly, is a little bit transitional for the team. So it's not something that we're really down on. I just think it's kind of the reality of being in a great conference at this present time.
And the next part, which we will reflect back on what we just said coming up, but where we talk about, can they make the tournament? Well, here's the thing. When you have such a great conference like this, you can have 4, maybe even 5 teams make the tournament. We had going into, I think, the Big Ten quarterfinals or even maybe even the semifinals, you had about 5 or 6 teams that were right there on the cusp of if this team wins a series or can grab a couple wins here at the end. like Wisconsin was ready to push in. I mean, Michigan State was even in the top 30. So I would say that I think that Michigan, I don't think they're a lock to make the tournament. I think that they can make the tournament. I think we talked about the defense needs to improve. They need to settle a system inside their defense to fit their goalie and get the right pairs together. And then they're going to need some, probably some third line scoring, and they're really going to need to fix the power play. If those things come together, I think Michigan can be a tournament team. Maybe not a, you know, top 4 to 6 seed, but mm-hmm. I think if they get hot, they can creep into maybe around 10 or so, a little bit like they did last year. Mm-hmm. And I just think that it you can lose a lot of games against these teams and still make it, because every game is a chance to make up a lot of ground.
Yeah, I mean, they were really a bad team until after the GLI last year.
Yeah.
And they finished a top 2 seed for the national tournament. So they still have a lot of leeway, even if they do struggle coming out of the gate in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot of room there to be caught up, as what you're saying, especially with the 4 games against Ohio State in the second half.
Right.
They will have to go to Notre Dame twice in the second half, which would be really good because they will have the opportunity to steal a couple road wins, which is big for pairwise and RPI.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing when pairwise is you have it does suck to go on the road, but if you can get a win on the road, then it really helps you, especially if you can grab a tie or something like that on the back end.
Yeah, we were really upset about having like 5 home games in the second half, mm-hmm. and it might really help Michigan. Because if they can win,
it's weird, some, right? Like that's
right.
We don't get to see the team, mm-hmm. but then if they go out and they get those wins, all of a sudden now you're looking at, okay, now we're flying up the pairwise. And I remember last year we were doing just an MGO podcast on a Sunday, and I asked Brian, "Hey, did you watch games this weekend?" Like, not really, but and they won. And then I was like, "They're 19th or 18th in pairwise." And he was like, "What?" I was like, "Yeah, because they had all these big wins, these road mm-hmm. wins, and all of a sudden now you're right back in the thick of it."
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Michigan's good enough to be there. I think that we've seen some reasons why that they could not be there so far, but I don't think that those are things that are necessarily going to continue or have to continue. I think that some of the things that they need to grow on are things that they've showed they could last year.
They have the right coaching staff
yep.
for this. So they are down on the overall roster construction. Like it's not where they would probably want it to be. I don't think it's ideal for a team to be a juggernaut, but you have the right coaching staff for getting the most out of it and, you know, being creative with getting the right matchups and putting the players in a position to succeed. And I think they've got a lot of things already figured out, and I think they will figure out what they need to. And so I do have faith that, you know, they definitely can be a tournament team to your original question. And I wouldn't be surprised if they were. They also might finish, you know, right outside given where they're at right now and kind of giving the gauntlet they're staring down. But I mean, that's basically what we thought going into the season anyway. So,
yeah.
You know, it is what it is. And I think it'll be really interesting to watch. The conference is going to be a lot of fun, though.
Yep.
And if you're, you know, for a hockey fan and for someone who's wanted this for quite a while, like it's going to be, you know, especially with the balanced schedule, it's going to be a bloodbath like every week. And I
yep.
think that, you know, it's really, really, really competitive and really good. And I think it's a bar that, you know, these teams have all collectively set, you know, by hiring good coaches. And it's really good that, you know, that's the level of competition, and that's the arms race right now.
Yep, I agree. So thank you for listening, if you've made it this far. It was not intended to be quite this long, but we wanted to give you a plenty of information to chew on. We don't get to do these too often because of just the way it all sets up. We're probably going to try to get back and do another podcast, maybe in a few weeks after football, sometimes when that slows down, and we'll see kind of where Michigan is at then. So thanks again for joining, Anthony, and hopefully next time we'll get to hear a little bit of what Adam thinks too, if we can work out some technical things.
Thanks for having me. It was great, and go Blue. Thank you for listening to MGO HockeyCast 1.2. I am Anthony Ciotti with David Nasternak. And even though we had quite a bit to talk about, we forgot to get to making a better name.